This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
We are coming back to Atlanta right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From grandmothers who whispered in their baby girl ear, to fathers on dimly lit street corners instructing young soldiers to always keep their eyes open, you be queen, you were fire, you were passed through centuries on the hands of your daughters, they called you wisdom. Proverbs, on the backs of diamond-eyed school children who grew into hymnals recited by amethyst-holding urban philosophers who recited neighborhood commandments out of the windows of restored El Camino chariots to keep the warmth in their blood. Be wise. Be smart. Be black opal, brown quartz, bloodstone, and prayer. Be every form of gem. See, king told scribe, scribe told son, son told wife, wife told her daughter, and daughter told the ancestors, and the ancestors told me that you would come to give wisdom to thousands. They said you would come, dropping gems, dropping gems.
Hey, it's Debbie Brown. You are locked into the Dropping Gems podcast. Today on the show, I have Vanessa Anderson. Now, Vanessa is the owner and senior account executive at AMPR Group. AMPR Group is a boutique public relations firm that specializes in entertainment, digital, and lifestyle industries. She has previously done publicity for shows like TMZ, The Real, The Preachers, and Black Lightning. And her current client roster includes some of your favorite people, like the phenomenal Issa Rae, Marsai Martin, Cassie, Melina Masukis, and the initiative Destination Crenshaw. Vanessa is also the woman behind my baby shower. She is one of my best friends in the whole wide world.
Hey, one time for the best friends. That's the best accomplishment on the list.
She is one of the most just spectacular women that I'm really, really blessed to know. And I'll get into all of the whys as we go throughout this episode.
So clearly I'll be crying the whole episode is what you're telling me. Got
Give me your tears. I want them all. You are joining me today on this show, and I was really excited that you said yes. Not because, you know, I thought you would say no, but you are also a very, very private person.
Yes.
And you are somebody, for reasons I do not understand, like to shy away from attention. Versus there's a lot of people on the gram, right, that post, which is totally their prerogative. You know, they post every detail about what they do professionally. Yeah. And that serves a lot of people who get to see that and hopefully embody some of those traits. On the flip side of that, because you influence so many people like behind that. The scenes.
Yeah.
And, you know, you choose to be a little bit more private. So I'm hoping to squeeze some stuff out of you today.
Yeah. I mean, I feel that my job is to make other people famous. It's not for me to be famous. And I think that the best way that I can be most effective in doing my job is to really be behind the scenes. On the flip side, I do realize that I occupy a really specific, special place, and it's important that I make myself available whether it's, you know, through one-on-one conversations or through something like this, for people to hear my story, or perhaps I can give someone a piece of advice, or someone who maybe is thinking about getting into public relations but doesn't really have an understanding of it, or whatever the case, or just entertainment in general, maybe I can spark something for them. Especially for a woman or a person of color to get into the business. So I don't feel like 1,000% comfortable doing stuff like this, but I understand
the need for it.
Yes.
And I'm really glad that you do now, because I think, you know, yours is a story personally and professionally that I think is really, really powerful and will really connect with so many people. And I also think that, I mean, you're a rock star, so I just want you out there.
I am not a rock star. I am a regular girl from Crenshaw and King, just out here trying to be great, but...
Let's lean into that a little bit. If you would...
Yes?
Give our listeners a little bit of background. Share some of your story.
So let's see. I am born and raised in Los Angeles. Grew up with my grandparents. I was living with both of my mom and my dad up until I was 5. And from 5 and on was with my grandparents, went to Catholic school, went to a little Catholic school called Transfiguration, grew up in South LA, got bused to Archer, the Archer School for Girls in Brentwood for high school. My grandmother, I think, identified really early on. I was a pretty good student, you know, in elementary school and middle school, but I think my grandmother really identified that maybe I was a little bit different, and she wanted to be sure that I had all the resources at my disposal to really bloom into whoever I was supposed to be. And then after that, went to New York, went to Columbia for undergrad, and then came back.
What was that experience like, kind of, you know, walking the line between these two worlds? You go from growing up in South LA, which we now call it that affectionately, but formerly known as South Central.
Yeah.
And then going to an area like Brentwood, which I'm presuming, you know, had a high attendance rate of probably Caucasian.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it was interesting, right? Because I'd gone to school down the street from my house for most of my life, had always been with brown and black kids, mainly black kids. All of my friends were black, you know. Maybe I had one or two even Latino friends, but all of my friends were black. I self-identified as black, even though my mom is from El Salvador. You know, I considered myself to just be a black girl. And it was jarring, you know. Even the process of getting to school was weird and different for me, because, you know, my grandparents would drop me off and be there early to pick me up from school. I never had to wait. I didn't have a commute.
Right. All this extra free time, not spending traffic.
Right. Well, yeah, because like coming from Brentwood in the afternoon was like an hour and a half, 2 hours sometimes, just to get to my bus stop. And then, you know, driving another 10 or 15 to get home. So even that experience was new for me. But as it pertains to the kids and the students, I think what really helped was that I was really smart. And I knew that if nothing else, that was always going to set me apart no matter what the setting was. Like, no matter who was in the classroom, I was always going to be one of these smarter people. So I knew that that was just sort of the position that I had. I do think that being at Archer, though, was really eye-opening for me. I think that it allowed me to see that people are, that white people live life very differently from us. And that people with, like, generational wealth or just... you know, real wealth. They live a different life than I did. And I didn't
come... There's like this air of carefreeness.
Oh, absolutely.
That is not typically experienced in our community.
Yeah, there's a sense of anything is possible.
Yeah.
Right? And they never second guess themselves, at least not publicly.
Yeah.
You know, there's never a fear. That's what they lack, is fear.
Fear.
you know, because if you didn't have to think about money, you would try so many different things. You would want to explore different parts of yourself. Absolutely. If you didn't have fear.
So from there, you also went to an Ivy League college. You went Barnard in New York.
Yes.
And what was that experience being this little LA girl, super LA girl?
Soup. I didn't realize how LA I was until I left LA.
Really? That's how I felt when I moved too. Oh my God. And I realized that I talked a little different and I was like, oh
yeah. This is new. So the summer before my senior year, I did a college program at Barnard. I knew I wanted to go to New York. I definitely knew I wanted to go East Coast for college. So I found this program that Barnard had. It was called the PCP program, which is the pre-college program. I think it's like maybe 2 weeks or 3 weeks. I can't remember the length of it, but you like move in, you live in the dorm, like, you know, you go to like the cafeteria, like you truly kind of immerse yourself in like a college experience. You take college level classes with professors. Yeah. So I did that and I was like, oh my God, I love New York. I love Barnard. I love all things here. I need to figure out, like, I got to come back. So I came back to, you know, came back home, did my senior year. I actually had done early decision for UPenn. So I was going to go there.
Oh, wow.
And then my grandmother died unexpectedly January 2003.
And right in the middle of your senior year.
Literally in the middle of senior year. And when she passed away, I realized that maybe I didn't have the kind of time that I thought I did. You
what
know,
does
her
that
health.
Mean? Didn't have the kind of time you thought you had.
Well, I just felt like anything could happen, right? And if there are things that you want to do, you should just do them because anything could happen. Like maybe I'm not in control of the time I have on the earth. So if that's the case,
even though it came through pain, what a incredible lesson to get at such a young age.
Yeah. Cause it was so unexpected. We weren't, you know, like at that point we were like figuring out like prom dates and we were planning like graduation stuff. So I never really saw my life without my grandmother, but I definitely never imagined that I wouldn't finish high school or that I would finish high school and she wouldn't be there. So I was like, I really want to go to New York and I really want to go to Barnard. And even though I was already early decision for UPenn, I applied anyway. And I said, you know, I said, okay, if I get in, I'm going to go like, and I'll just figure it out. And I got in and UPenn had given me a really great financial aid packet. And Barnard was like, not as great. So I was like, so look, Barnard, I want to come, but I'm going to need y'all to run me that money. And they did.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, there's something else at play here. So I was like, let me go. And it was one of the greatest decisions. No, it's probably the greatest decision I've ever made.
What? You did a really beautiful interview recently with the website livingcivil.com. And they did a profile on you and kind of your rise, like for Women's Month.
Yes. Yeah.
What is the full name of that?
International
Women's History Month. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
And, you know, I loved they dived into a lot of the early parts of your career, some of the stresses that happened after college and that sweet space of finding out, you know, what do I want to do?
Yeah.
And another great lesson from you in proactiveness, I feel like, and in courageousness. In this article, you shared that, you know, you had taken a couple smaller level jobs because you were trying to figure it out. And it was during the recession. You couldn't, you know, you weren't finding yourself easily hired, even coming from that Ivy League university.
Yeah.
And something I loved is that you contacted the aunt of someone you went to high school with who worked in the entertainment business. And you just called them up and you said, hey, I need some advice on what to do with my life. And they helped you kind of walk through what career path you could fall in love with, how to kind of get it going. And that's when you discovered publicity, that was the calling for you.
And I was like, there has to be some kind of career out there that involves me helping people, but is with music and TV. And I was like, well, do I know anybody that works in music and TV? And I was like, oh, Nina Shaw, Aunt Nina. And I was like, let me just email her real quick and just see what happens. She busy. She may not even respond. Or she may send me to someone else and maybe that person can help me and inspire me. And we had a conversation. She was like, you know, she kind of thought about it for a second. And she was like, I think you'd be really great as a publicist. And I was like, what is a publicist? What does that do? What do they do? How does that work? And she really was like, read these books, talk to these people, call me back, then like hung up.
I love that.
Read the books. Because I was very like, what is this? Like, how does she identify what she thought was the perfect career for me so quickly?
Yeah.
Right. And I was like, okay, let me. So I read the books, talked to the people, called her back probably like within the week. And I was like, oh my God, yes.
This is it.
This is it. This is literally the perfect job for me. And she was gracious enough to help me find like a internship, which then became like an assistant position. And that was really the beginnings
there.
Of it. Yeah.
I want to dive in for a second and talk about how we know each other.
Ooh.
So Vanessa and I originally met in a summer school program when we were
into the ninth grade.
Yeah. So 14.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I had just turned 14, maybe. And it was, were we going?
Loyola.
Yeah, Loyola High School in LA. It's an all-boys school, which, listen, that provided as a very interesting summer for me. So it was all-boys high school, but in the summertime, it would be co-ed.
Yes.
And so a lot of the girls' schools... Mm-hmm. In the area would go there for summer.
Yeah.
I was not in the area. I actually, at that time, my mom had moved us. You know, I've lived everywhere that Los Angeles has to offer.
Literally. I have a photo of us.
Oh, never show it anywhere. That better never be a throwback Thursday.
First of all, you looked cute.
No.
I looked like what? I was like,
well, I will say that
let
is,
me out.
That's
like
the
this.
First summer that I found my cute. Right?
My cute had not been discovered at all.
That's the first summer that I kind of started leaning towards being cute. Before that,
yes.
I had been a very awkward, hot mess every year prior of
now,
my life.
No, you looked cute. Like I'm envisioning this one photo. And you looked cute. You had like a white shirt on. Like you looked cute. Your hair was up in a pony.
Don't ever.
You were cute.
We didn't cross paths after that.
No.
And then I remember Twitter had just started. So this is also a very long time ago. It was what? Probably 07-ish maybe? 08?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Twitter had just started.
Yeah.
By that time, I'm working in radio.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working at KDA in LA. I had just... I think signed up for Twitter and I was a tweeting. And back then Twitter was really different.
There were
really
like different. Five people on Twitter.
There were five people on Twitter and most of the people were in the industry.
Yeah.
It was not
it was
really, you know, the everyday person wasn't typically on Twitter.
Yeah.
It was really a space of primarily creatives and just LA and New York industry people. And that's it.
And you could like tweet people or like send them messages, no matter even celebrities.
Super
and
famous
they would
or not,
like
and they
respond.
Would, yep.
And you knew it was them. It wasn't like someone managing
on their team or I used to get actually so many celebrities to sign up for Twitter because they'd come to the station and never have heard of it, and then I would help them like start their accounts. I'm like,
Twitter owe you
a
check.
Twitter account, like
Twitter owe you a check.
I know. So I remember I'm on Twitter tweeting, and I get this tweet from you, and it was like, is this Devin from Loyola Summer School? And I was like, what? And so, long story short, that's how we reconnected.
Yes.
This is now, what, maybe 15 years ago?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And then we've been in each other's
lives
ever
since. Do you remember? I feel like we must have we connected on there and then shortly thereafter went to Aroma Cafe on Sunset. And I feel like that's when I told you that this is what I was getting into publicity. And I don't know if you remember this, but I actually asked you, I was like, can I be your plus one to things? I don't know if you remember that. It was a very pivotal moment for me because I didn't really have a connection. Because at the time I was doing, my first job in publicity was for like an eco-friendly green initiative focused company. And while that was important, I wasn't passionate about it. I really wanted to do music. But I left that company and ended up going into fashion PR. Again, was fine. I was learning a lot of stuff because a lot of those skills are transferable no matter what the field is. But again, wasn't passionate about it. I really wanted to do music because I love music. And you were the only person that I knew that was in the music business. So I was like, maybe she'll let me just roll with her to places. And you did. I don't know if you really, it's so long ago.
Well, I definitely remember that when we connected.
We started rolling.
Yeah, we
everywhere.
Were just rolling, kicking it.
Yeah.
And at that time, especially, oh my God, every out night here. Of the week. Yeah. Out here. I was at something.
Like, yeah. You were always out. And I remember just being like, can I be your plus one? And you were like, yeah, girl, of course. And, but it was so important because I met so many people through that experience. Like, either you knew them and were like, oh, this is my girl, Vanessa. Or like, you know, at that point, at that time, I was really big on networking, and I had told myself, you know, if I was going out to an event, that by the end of the night, I needed 20 cards. And before I would leave wherever I was, even if I was sitting in the car, I would send an email to everyone. Just because I would still be fresh on their mind. Yeah. I wanted to send the email.
I literally used to do that too. When I got started, I would collect all these cards, and I had like a little bag that I would put them all into. Mm-hmm. And then the very next morning, the top of the morning, I would wake up and I would email every single person whose card I got with a, hey, you know, great to meet you. Would love to collaborate in the future or, you know, and
look
that's
at
how
us. Cut from the same cloth.
tell me a little bit. I kind of want to dive into this because I really love the relationship that you have with Issa. Issa is one of the biggest stars of our generation. She is absolutely...
She's pretty special.
Hashtag goals for so many people all over the world. Extremely hardworking woman. You know, I first heard of her, I want to say in 07 because of you.
Yeah.
You know, you guys started working together, I believe, before she even started her YouTube show.
Shortly thereafter.
Yeah, right
shortly
when she started.
I think she was like episode... four or five of the first season of Aqua Black Girl.
And I remember you telling me about her, like, yo, there's this girl, Issa, you know, she's fire, she's doing this and that.
Crazy.
And
we've been together a long time.
Really, really
Almost
long 10 time.
Years, yeah.
And I love that not only have you guys continued to work together and grow together, but you seem to have a really, really special bond as women and as friends.
Yeah.
And a really kind of kindred karmic relationship, like a deep understanding of who one another is as a woman.
Yeah.
So watching you guys, because I've been around both of you together sometimes, and watching you guys kind of exist with one another is just, there's a specialness there.
Yeah. I'm confident that I will never get another client like that, or that I'll never have that relationship with another client. I think, not to be like all like sappy or anything, but I think that Issa is kind of like a soulmate of mine.
Yeah, I see that.
And also, like, we've put in a lot of years with each other, and we started together. You know, we really came up in this business together. I think that we've learned a lot with each other, watching each other. And I'm really, really grateful to have her as a client, period. And then I'm doubly grateful to have her as like a sounding board, someone I can vent to, someone I can go to for advice, and someone who is truly, truly invested in me and my success and my company's success. She, you know, is really invested in the women that I work with, that I hire. Like, she really cares in a way where typically just other people, even friends, don't care, you know, to that level.
Yeah.
Definitely surpasses what I think most people would have for like a publicist talent relationship, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we see each other as kind of like, I'll say this. I see her as an extension of like my right or left hand. Yeah. And I don't typically make any major like business decisions without running them by her. Yeah. We really value each other's opinions, which is very hard to find.
Yeah.
Because we know that it comes from a place of love, you know?
Though your situation is very special and very different, especially because you guys were both growing your passions at the same time together.
Absolutely.
And both of you ended up being able to take off in really big ways and expand.
Yeah.
But what are maybe some tips you can give for anybody that has a relate, like a working relationship with a friend? Because that is tough territory to navigate sometimes.
Well, I think if I'm actually being completely honest, I think working with friends is really, really, really difficult.
Yeah.
The thing that's different about me and Issa too is we were not friends first. Mm. We just had a regular working relationship, and over the years it have become evolved. Friends. And even then, there's still a boundary. Like, there's still a line there. You know, I'm not her best friend. She has best friends. She's not my best friend.
Right.
I have best friends. Like, does she know all the inner workings of my life? No. Do I probably know more about her just by the function of my job? Yes.
Right.
But, you know, there's still things that we keep to ourselves, you know, that are not a part of our relationship. But when you have a friend that you're working with, and you've already been friends and you're getting into a business relationship, I would say the biggest tip is that you guys have to maintain a boundary between this is our working relationship and this is our personal relationship. You can't throw personal shit in somebody's face and vice versa. That's not fair. And if you're talent, or even if you're, you know, I'll use my sort of career as an example. If you're a publicist and you're representing a friend and they come to you and say, hey, look, I didn't like the way that we did X, Y, and Z, or I really want us to think about this in a different way. You need to be able to receive that feedback and not be offended as a friend.
Yeah. And that's hard.
It's very difficult. You know, and if this is the thing, you know, certain friends you can't work with. So don't force it.
Yeah.
Just say, you know what, girl, I'm not the best fit, but let me find somebody for you. Right. But if you do have a friend where you're like, I think that this is something that we could work on together, being really clear up front about maintaining boundaries.
Yeah.
Being open to constructive criticism from each other and not being offended by it and learning from it. I think that that's so key.
There are various points of your career you have shared different times with me where people have wanted to buy you out.
Yeah.
What made you decide to bet on yourself and keep your company yours when you had big checks dangled in front of you?
So this happened a lot last year. I probably got about 7 offers from major PR companies who wanted to buy my company out. And some of them, the offers were phenomenal, almost to the point I was like, I think you have me confused.
Did you add an extra zero to this?
This is a lot. To the other side of it, where I was like, you must not know who I am. Right, you got me. You know, so... But, and I'll say this, if someone gave me a phenomenal offer that was just like life-changing, it would be something I would consider. Otherwise, it's not worth it to me. And the main reason why it's not worth it is because when I go to the walkthrough for the Golden Globe, when I go to the publicist walkthrough for the Emmys, I am oftentimes, if there is maybe 150, 200 publicists there, I'm maybe one of two publicists there. And if I'm one of two publicists there, I'm definitely the only one that owns her own company. And I have to always remember that when I have these meetings with these big, large companies who are like, hey, we want to, you know, buy you out. We want you to come in house and, you know, we want you to, you know, just be an employee. I have to tell myself, why would you do that? Like, you've spent all your money. You've put in so much time. You've sacrificed so much. You've, you know, lost friends, gained friends, lost boyfriends. Like, you've given up. You've sacrificed so much for this. Why then would you not even at my peak, because I'm not at my peak. I'm on my climb, right? I'm climbing up. I'm ascending. Why would you now decide, all right, let me go work over here? That's part of it. The other part is I don't need to do it. I make fine money. Mm-hmm. I have the life that I want. I'm able to do what I want when I want. And the main reason why I started the company was because I often felt that I was the smartest. I was smarter than my bosses. And I wanted to work with the clients that I wanted to work with. I didn't want to be assigned, you know, someone that I didn't believe in. I didn't want to work with men who were misogynistic. I didn't want to work with women who, you know, didn't care about other women of color or, you know, just other women. I just never wanted to be forced to work with people who I wasn't passionate about.
Yeah.
And if I went in-house, no matter what the company was, one, I would never be working for a Black woman because no agencies, large agencies are owned by Black women. None of them.
Jeez.
And I didn't want to work for someone that didn't look like me.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be someone's puppet. And I didn't want to be the Black girl that you pull into the room to lock the client in. You weren't going to use me in that way. So until there is another woman, another Black woman that owns a major PR company who will allow me to work with the clients that I want to work on, and who will not use me as their token Black woman, until that situation comes along, I think little AMPR group will just be out here wreaking havoc.
I love it. You were behind the huge Emmy party.
Yeah.
That kind of took over social media.
Yeah.
This past year after the Emmys. It was like the Black party.
It was.
And you saw all of A-list, mm-hmm. everybody, but also not just A-list, because I don't want to make it sound overly exclusive. Like, it was just so many of the incredible Black creatives mm-hmm. and faces and talents, both in front of the camera, behind the scenes, different parts of the industry.
Yeah.
But you helped create this massive, massive party.
Yeah. I mean,
tell me about that experience. So, and even how it came about, but what did it feel like in the moment?
So I've been blessed enough to, you know, have clients nominated or presenting at major award shows, Emmys, Golden Globes, Oscars, Grammys, etc. And you go to these events and afterwards, you know, you go to these big award shows and afterwards, like, Netflix has a party, Hulu has a party, HBO, you know, Fox, FX, whoever, everyone has, the networks and the studios all do parties. And you go to the parties without a doubt, every single party, there is what we call the Black corner, also affectionately known as corner.
Oh,
right. And it's all the Black people have found each other and have congregated in this one section. And what I've learned from that, though, is that two things. One, if you're not at the top of the call sheet, you don't get invited, even if you're on the show. So say,
even if you're on the show,
if you're not at the top of the call sheet, they won't even extend an invite to you. For sure, if you are behind the scenes, if you're a producer, sometimes if you're lower than like an executive producer or a co-EP, if you're a writer, you don't get invited. So for the seven of us that make it into the party, we find each other because it's always the same ones, and we hang out in the corner with each other, because those parties and those award shows and those events are really not designed for us. Right? We have been invited to them, but they're not there for us. The music's not good. The food's not good. Like, it's not a party or an event to celebrate us. And this has been happening for years and years and years and years and years. So a really close friend of mine, Aronde Garrett, who works with Idris Elba and Jesse Williams, it was Afropunk weekend in New York. I was out there with Issa, and Angie Martinez was throwing a barbecue, like, for Power 105. We went to the barbecue. On the way out, Aronde stops me and he's like, I got to talk to you about something that I want to do. And he's like, I only want to do it with you. I know that you're the right person that I need to partner on this with. So I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever, Aronde. He hits me later because I'm in work mode. I'm like, I don't got time to plan no party with you. Like, I'm working. He hits me later, tells me what he wants to do. And he's like, why don't we throw a party? And I was like, I'm not a party. I don't throw parties. Like, that's not what I do. And he's like, no, this is, he's like, think about it. You know, he's like, think about most of our talent are not at the, and by our talent, not him and I, but just in black talent. We're not at the top of the call sheets. If our show's not nominated, we definitely don't get invited to stuff, but people need to be able to celebrate and celebrate in a way and in a place that they feel uninhibited and they feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's something I can get behind. So I think I want to say maybe within a week, 2 weeks. No, I would say probably within a week. Him and I, you know, we were like, okay, what do we want the party to be? And then I really was there to execute. So, you know, I was literally outside the whole party for the most part, deciding who got in, who got out. Like, I was like, if I'm going to throw this party, it's going to be black as fuck. I think there were maybe two white people in the whole party. And that was because they were co-signed by several other people. Several other people, you know, and people knew immediately when they walked in, they were like, oh, this is for us. Mm. This is a party where we can be ourselves. There aren't a bunch of people. Look, we didn't even confiscate phones or put the phones in those little pouches or whatever. And people didn't have their phones out. They were dancing. They were drinking. They were finally connecting with people that they'd been wanting to but hadn't had an opportunity to. You know, no reps were inside. So your manager couldn't come with you. Your publicist couldn't come with you. You could come with your friend, but that was it. You know, we really wanted a place for people, especially for talent, I think, to really feel comfortable. And then because I work on the backside, right? Like I'm one of the people in the background. For me, it was really important that my agent friends like Ashley Holland at WME or, you know, Talitha Watkins at CAA, that they all felt like they had a place to come to. Because people forget, like, all of these people behind the scenes are the ones that make the TV shows happen, that make the movies happen, that get these projects greenlit. They also deserve a place to be celebrated and to have fun. You know, that last year Samsung was awesome and came in literally like within a week and said, we'll get behind you and support you. Shout out to Woody. And we were like, we're going to throw this party. And I knew that because it was the first one, it needed to feel right. The right people needed to be in the room. Like, you know, this wasn't a place for reality stars. You know, this wasn't a place for, you know, I'm an up and coming, this and this and this. No, this was really a place for people who are actively working in the business and excelling to come and be with their own people. Mm.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, I got a lot of very angry texts and emails, probably for like a month, and Aronde. Afterwards, you know, people who came that weren't allowed in that I know, but I'm like, ooh. Yeah, I was very particular about who I wanted in that room and how that room was curated. Because this isn't, you know, no shade, but like, this isn't Poppy. This isn't, you know, Bootsy. This wasn't a club night.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, so hold on. Walk me through this for a second.
Yeah.
Because this is part of the job, right? Especially in your job.
Yeah.
In your job, you have to be very...
nice, nasty.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You got to be a Sour Patch Kid.
Yeah.
You know? What does that look like when you are behind one of the biggest parties on one of the biggest nights? Mm-hmm. You have people that you do... like and respect, I imagine.
Absolutely.
You know, that you've probably worked with on various things or had great moments with. Mm-hmm. How do you turn someone like that away from the door? What do you say?
I'm so sorry. I'm not going to be able to let you in.
Let you in. Oof. So you didn't even like direct it like, oh.
No, because I'm not going to lie. It's too much work.
So, and then when they say, what do you mean? Why? What do you say?
I don't know that part. But yeah, I mean, I would probably just be honest, be like, I'm sorry, we're curating the room. Oh yeah. This is the thing. I'm so comfortable being me. I'm so comfortable. And this is the thing, real talk, you know if you were supposed to be in that room or not. Mm. You weren't surprised if I didn't let you in.
Okay.
Like, you have Stan Lathan going into the party, who's one of our legends, right? You have Tiffany Haddish coming in. You have Dave Chappelle in the room. You have, like, you know, high-level agents. You have real movers and shakers in the business coming.
Yeah. So if this was just for your ego or for the Instagrams, if you couldn't go in that room and actually start a project with someone that was in that room, then that wasn't your room.
Right. And that's okay. Yeah. There were a bunch of people who came who I knew and didn't know where I'm like, you don't work. You pretend to work.
Oh, Jesus. Come on. This is a whole different episode.
You pretend to work. This isn't the room for you.
What does pretend to work look like?
Pretend to work looks like you are a publicist and you have a client on the carpet, yet you're posting a photo of you at the step and repeat on your Instagram page.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, this is my very spicy friend, Vanessa. You know, she is one of the kindest, sweetest, truly most, absolutely most generous people I've ever met in my life. Like, extremely thoughtful to a next level degree. But she stands in her truth very, very staunchly.
Yeah, I'm okay to be me. And me is many things. You asked me earlier, like, what was one of the biggest, I think you said, tips or advice or something that I had gotten. And I was telling you about Tammy and how she was saying, always be yourself, no matter what the room is. The other piece of advice that I got was from another mentor of mine, Black woman. Shout out to Yvette Noel Shore. She's Beyonce's publicist. So I was like, she obviously has all the gems for me.
Yeah, she knows what she's doing.
She knows what she's doing. And she really taught me, not even saying, but just by how she lives, that you can still be very successful in this career by being a kind person. and being compassionate and being thoughtful. And I think that those are parts of me that were already there. I think that there's this idea that those are not transferable characteristics that play well in this field, but they do. So I'm happy to always be myself.
Yeah.
But my delivery can be kinder, or my delivery can be not so kind, depending on what the situation is. So for like that party, there were some people where I was just like, bruh, it's not gonna happen. I'm so sorry, you know? And then there were other people who I was like, it's 11 o'clock. The party's at capacity. They're maybe gonna give me another 45 slots. I know that these other big talent or big people are coming. I can't.
Yeah.
I can't let you in. Or it's like, you know, it's crazy because that night was like part me being just a publicist and a regular person. And then the other part was me really being like a party promoter. Facts. Because I'm like, why did you come to the party with seven people?
Right.
So none of y'all are getting in now. You know, so like some people took themselves out the running because they just didn't abide by the rules. Like I told you, you could just come by yourself. I had you, yeah. Not you plus 20. So, you know, it was difficult though. I got several emails, several calls, several text messages from people that were like, I can't believe you didn't tell me about the party, or I can't believe you didn't invite me to the party. And some people, I literally just forgot because mm-hmm. literally I had a client nominated for an Emmy for the first time, Issa. I had Marseille. It was literally like we had onboarded Marseille like 3 or 4 days before the Emmys. And then I decided to plan this party.
Yeah.
So like there were close friends of mine who I just forgot to invite. That will never happen again because now we're like, we've got proper time to plan it. But, you know, I was like, I got real friends who I forgot to invite. And you mad? And we don't do business together. Mm-hmm. You barely know me. You barely like my photos on Instagram. Like, and you mad? You know, but
yeah. You know. Well, I think too, like what you're kind of illustrating at the same time is that you can be, when you stand in the fullness of who you are, that also means you have layers.
Yes.
So you, they're yes. not mutually exclusive. Like yes. you, there is a duality. Like yes. you can be a hard ass. You can yes. be stern. You can be, you know, very tightly curated. And you can also be very kind and very yes. generous. And all of those things can exist at one time. It yeah. is not a, you have to be, you know, a bitch in the boardroom, or you can be a sweetheart. You know, yeah. you can have all of those sides of yourself
absolutely.
Displayed.
And all of those sides of me are useful at certain moments.
In different ways, yeah.
In different ways, yeah. Yeah, I'm okay with that. Look, there's probably people when we do the Emmy party this year, because we will do the Emmy party again.
Oh, snap.
I'm sure. One, for one, we'll get a bigger venue so we can accommodate more people. Because that was the other thing, too, was because we planned it so late, we had no idea who was going to come, who wasn't going to come. And because I have planned so many events, I'm like, I'd rather have a smaller space that I can fill up than a big place that looks empty.
Yeah, for the first round.
For the
yeah.
first round. Now we know. Y'all came out. So next time we'll do a bigger party.
I'd love to that you brought up that somebody came, you know, with seven or 10 people. That's another part, especially when you have industry relationships. It's like you have to be really honest with one another about what the circumstance is and yes. avoid all awkwardness and yes. just like save space for, okay, it may not be this time, but it may be the next time.
Yeah.
Because I think even over the years, like you and I have gone to different events together and we've each taken turns saying to the other person, okay, listen, mm-hmm. I don't know mm-hmm. if it's only me getting in.
Mm-hmm.
If it is, I'll catch you later.
Yep.
If there is a chance for yes. me to have us both,
then we good. We good.
Then we good. Yeah. Or, you yeah. know, it's like sometimes you tell friends, like, stay close by.
Yes.
I don't know for sure, but I'll let you know either yes. way. Instead yes. of like creating that awkward space of, oh, I don't want to leave you at the... No, it's okay.
Leave me.
Leave me at the door.
Girl, because
if we can't both get in, but you can get in,
yes.
go.
Yes.
Flourish and then bring me along for that the part, next thing.
Right. Bring me to the next thing or make a connection for me that maybe I can use later. You know,
absolutely.
Like,
yeah. And that's also part of the long-term vision, right? And
yeah.
not taking things personally.
Girl, when I get to a party or an event or whatever, and I can't get in, you know what that is? That's God saying, girl, go home.
Before we start to wrap up, if you would
yeah.
share with me some energy shifting books or or podcasts that you have in your life, something that has shifted things for you or created a space for you that mm-hmm. you think are important for other people to check out?
So I actually think that the most important, it's not even a book, it's not a podcast, but the most important relationship that I have that really made me shift my energy and my thinking is actually my relationship with you.
Really?
Yeah, because I've seen you transition and I've seen you become, or I've seen you add new titles to your life. You know, I've seen you go from, you know, radio host to TV personality to wife to mom, podcast queen. Like, I've seen you add all these titles or responsibilities, rather, to your plate with grace. Even if there's some challenges in accepting them, you've always been able to come out on the other side with a lot of grace. And that's really been inspiring, and it has changed how I see myself, right?
Wow.
And then also just your journey into being your better self.
Yeah.
Has really forced me to be like, is there a better self out there of you, Vanessa? No, seriously. You know, like, because you wrote your book, I really got into crystals. And because you had Karma Bliss, and because I am a friend who supports friends by purchasing, not by asking.
Thank you, girl.
No, but really, like, I was like, I'm gonna buy this rose quartz necklace. And bought it just because it was yours, right? Yeah. I bought one of the little satchels with the crystals in it.
Bliss bag.
Yeah, bliss bag. I bought that, not even keep it 100, not even with the intention of really using it.
Yeah.
But just to be like, I'm supporting my friend. But in the process of getting it, being like, well, if I just spent this money, what is this? You see what I'm saying? So like, in supporting you, ended up supporting myself. So like, all these touch points for you that are related to you has been really important for me. I think outside of you, though.
First, let me say thank you.
Of course.
Thank you so much. I did not pay her
say
that.
She didn't.
I only offered her basic level water during the recording of this show.
Okay, first of all, this water is not basic. Okay.
Yeah, y'all know I only drink alkaline water.
It's like super bomb and... Where do you even buy this water? Whole Foods?
Amazon.
Oh, this is fancy. Okay. Anyways, but yes, no. And I really do mean, I honestly mean that. And even if we weren't here together, I would have said that. I think outside of her, Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, was really powerful for me. Michelle Obama's book, Becoming, was really inspiring for me. And then I would say... For podcast, I really actually love when Rap Radar does interviews with like the Jay-Z's of the world or like an Anthony Saleh, like, because those are people behind the, well, Jay not as much, but like an Anthony is behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And I'm really inspired by those people because that's a similar position that I play.
Shout out to Ant.
Shout out to
Elliot and Brian too.
Excellent work.
Yeah, they do phenomenal work.
Excellent work. And then I think, you know, I love Lovey. I love her Rants and Randomness. I love that podcast. And I think what's really, really important too is that we incorporate laughter into our lives. And probably my favorite podcast that does that for me is The Read, because they are cutting up the whole time and it's so fun to me. Like, it's I love being able, one, it like keeps me up on the latest and the greatest, because sometimes I miss the tea. But you know, they're also really, really smart. They're very smart. I love their opinions. I love their views on things, and they're really funny.
Yeah.
And I like having an opportunity to laugh, because my
and that's, you know, so important,
girl.
Like, adding more playfulness into your life, especially as an adult, is so important.
Yeah. And in that case, I can start and pause it, you know.
Yeah.
I can be like, oh, I haven't caught up, let me, you know, on a commute, you know, we live in LA, I live in South LA, most of my life, my work life is not in that area.
Yes, in traffic.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time in traffic.
I use LA traffic specifically to nourish my spirit now.
Yes.
Yeah. I either drive in silence and just kind of process and,
oh my gosh, my best ideas.
Create space for for ideas and creativity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I listen to like a audiobook or something else that feels good.
You know what? Podcast. I can't do an audiobook. I tried. Issa wanted me to read this one book. And she was like, just get the audiobook. And I got the audiobook and I just couldn't.
What was the book?
An American Marriage.
Oh, I read that. Oh,
oh my God. So did that Joanna tell you to read that?
No.
Okay.
I actually had just picked it up at the airport to have like another book. It was, you know, one of the ones on the forefront of like new releases. Yeah. I was like, what is this about?
So we were in, I feel like we were in France, Issa and I, last year. And she either had just finished it or maybe she saw something and was inspired by it. And she was like, have you read this book? And I was like, no. And I wanted to be like, girl, when would I have read this book? When do I have time? And I love to read. I was like, when do I have time to read books? But she was like, you really should read this. And I remember saying, when do I have time to read books? And she was like, girl, just get the audiobook. So I downloaded the audiobook and the book, side note, I ended up just buying the hardcover and reading it. And it's phenomenal. It's an amazing book. Yeah. Everyone should read it.
God.
But it really, girl, we'll offline about that.
The turns.
But I tried the audiobook and I really could not get into it. Like I really struggled with, and I tried a couple of other ones and I was
I think depending on the book and depending on who's reading it, because that has a lot to do with it.
Yes.
That book particularly, the way that story is told, it would be very confusing and hard to get into the story as an audiobook.
Yes.
Because it has so many perspectives in the book and so many time jumps.
Yes.
Too hard. But other books, like right now, I just finished Digital Minimalism as an audiobook and The Conscious Parent as an audiobook. And those were
great.
Yeah. Great. Okay. So yeah, just try it again.
Yeah.
Tell me some of the things that you do to replenish yourself.
Things that I do to replenish myself. I regularly get massages.
Good. Those are important, man. And it's not just for the relaxation element, which, by the way, I'm not a fan of Swedish massage. I want to go in there and I want you to whoop my ass. And I feel incredible. The deepest of tissues.
So I would say last year, probably like around maybe the time Insecure season 3 came out, which was July, I was flying a lot. And it was really weighing on my body. And I was like, I've got to really make some changes. One with just in general my health and like exercising and food and food choices and stuff. But I was like, I really also need to like literally take care of my body and I need someone to work on my body consistently. Because, you know, even if you're in first class and you want to lay flat, like it's still a plane. It's not a bed.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like it starts to really affect your neck and your shoulders and your hips and your legs and everything. So I really incorporated getting regular massages into my schedule in the same way I put in, you know, meetings or anything else.
Good for you. I'm glad.
Yeah. And I've been able to maintain like a healthy body and posture and stuff because I do that so regularly.
And also it's like setting the intention in the universe, in the spiritual realm that, hey, I care about myself.
Yes.
Like I'm looking to invite more abundance in by the care and the joy that I treat myself with.
I think the other way that I really replenish myself is it's probably sounds a little silly, but I'm really big on my nails. Like I really love like having cool designs and getting the latest trends. So I spend a lot of money getting my nails done. And what I've found is for that hour, 2 hours, I put my phone down. I literally cannot be on the phone. And it gives me maybe an hour or 2 hours to just kind of disconnect. And the only thing that I have is me and the nail tech or nothing or silence.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end, I'm able to walk away with something really cool or dope or pretty. And then lastly, something I've been doing more recently, I think this may be news to you, is I used to sew. Like I know how to sew, like I can make clothes and whatever else. And because my schedule has gotten so hectic, I don't have a lot of time to complete projects. Right. So I don't have time to like cut the patterns out, cut the fabric out, sit and sew it, whatever. And I need things or projects that I can see to completion. Mm. Right. Like I need to be able to finish things because in my work life, there's so many things that go unfinished. So I need some sort
of energetic level. That's really important to be able to experience completion. Otherwise, it kind of creates this open-ended space that stays in you when you have all of these unfinished projects around you.
Look at that.
You close the circle when you either choose to complete it or you choose to say, I will not complete this, and put it away. But when you leave it there, like, oh, I gotta finish this.
Yeah.
You really take away energy in your life and out of your spirit that you could be filled with space. Yeah.
That's so, man, I'm on a higher level and didn't even know it. No, but so what I started to do was I started making lotions.
Oh.
Yeah. So I was inspired by strippers.
Okay. Let's unpack this.
Yes. So I did a semester at Spelman in college, and a lot of my dating experiences were tied to the strip club. At that time, I don't know how it is now, but I would meet dudes and they would be like, want to go to the strip club? And I was like, sure.
Yeah.
Why not? And I ended up going a lot. And then as my career has, you know, I've gone into different parts of my career. Sometimes I have to go to the strip club with a client or they want me to go because some dudes invited them and they're like, I don't know, he's sketch, like, come with me.
Or sometimes they have really good food and that's the only thing open after the club.
That part. For real, for real.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm trying to sign a client and he's like, meet me at the strip club. Or she's like, meet me at the strip club. I'm like, all right, I'm at the strip club. So after being in many strip clubs in many cities in the United States and abroad, I was like, okay, because I really love like well moisturized skin. It's like a thing of mine, right? Especially for Black people, because like ash shows up for us. So like, I need you to not be ashy. I don't know what happened where I was like, I'm gonna start making lotions. I don't remember that point, but I do remember saying, okay, if I'm gonna make a lotion, whose skin would I want to mimic or would I want to have? Now, you've been to strip clubs, I'm sure.
No comment.
Okay. Well, from my experience, I will say,
come on. I lived in Houston for a few years.
Oh, so then, like, yeah. So, you know, but a great stripper doesn't have a smell. And if she does have a smell, it's a very pleasant smell. And she's super soft.
How many people are you touching in these clubs?
It's not about that. You're getting lost in the weed. The point is, they have super soft skin and they don't have an odor, despite the physical activity that they're doing for hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Because when you really think about that, because even if you're at a party in a room full of people, you get a little moist and a little, you know, hot. And
you get hot. You get sweaty.
Yeah.
And we, at least at a party, have the protection of clothing to soak up sweat, funk, whatever.
So two things. One, this episode has taken quite the turn. That I was not expecting. Let's really talk about the research that was done here with your inspiration. I mean, were you walking in to...
Well, I would be at clubs and I was like, you know, if a lot of times, especially when I was in Atlanta, dudes would get like lap dances for you.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not like some crazy prude where I'm not gonna like touch a leg or like touch a, like I'm touching.
Grab a cheek. I'm learning a lot about you right now.
I'm a very respectful strip club patron.
It's not a firm grab. It's just like more of a gentle pat.
We're in the weeds. Okay. That doesn't matter. Okay. The point is, a good stripper smells good and has soft skin despite physical activity for hours. Okay.
Okay.
So I was like, how can I duplicate that? So when I had that thought, I ended up going to a couple more strip clubs. So I started asking them.
This is the part I wanted to get into, the research.
When you decided
to begin making lotions as a way to nourish yourself and kind of take your mind off of things.
Yes.
You made appointments.
I did not make appointments. Don't try to play me, Dev.
Don't try to play me.
I would be out already. And I would be like, oh, let me ask her. I'd be like, girl, what do you use on your skin? This is the thing.
I'm just thinking of the clients on your roster now. And I want to know who you had to go to these clubs with.
Mm-mm. This is also years. This is over years.
Okay.
This is over years. This isn't like within the past 5 months.
Because I was like, well, Issa.
No.
Is not taking you there.
First of all, you don't know what I do with my clients.
Okay. Okay.
First of all, don't be acting like you know. You don't know what I'm doing with people. You don't know where we at. What rooms we in.
So did you ask them? Did you say, what do you do for your body?
I started asking them. I said, hey, I was like, your skin is so soft, or like, you smell great. I'd be like, what do you use? So I probably asked about a dozen women. And then I put those ingredients together in a lotion.
Okay.
And that lotion is called my stripper OG lotion.
Oh, okay.
And since then, I've made other versions, some that are like more all natural, organic.
Oddly enough, I didn't know you were making lotions, mm-hmm. but now that I think about it, your softness is a really big priority to you.
Yes.
And I have absolutely heard you comment on other people's softness. And I have heard you discussing lotion quite often.
I love soft skin. It's also part of my woo for men, like how I woo them in.
Yeah. They shake your hand and they're like, my God.
Yeah. I smell good and I have soft skin. But yeah, so the point is I started making these lotions, and the lotions I can make really fast. I can make a lotion in 20 minutes. So I started making these lotions and I love, again, like I love soft skin. I love like being moisturized. I also love gifting people things. And it's something that I can start and end really quick. Yeah. Like, so I can start a project and end a project
in between meetings. Yeah, I really love that, actually, because yeah. I think us doing things with our hands, especially now in this day and age, we get really, really disconnected from yes. things like that. But they're such grounding and centering activities.
Yeah.
Just to take on small hobbies, like nothing too big. This doesn't have to be your second source of income. It can just be something you enjoy doing when you have a second.
Yep.
That, you know, it's the method in it. It's the ritual of it. It's yeah. the use of your hands.
And like, I'm at the point now where I love it so much where I'm like, I wonder if I could make like an all natural version of like a Vicks vapor rub, right?
Yeah.
So now that also becomes something really yeah. useful.
I actually just made one for Quest.
See?
Yeah. I'm like that too. If I get the chance, I like to do, I'm a very, very, very crafty person.
Yeah.
And it brings me lots of, yeah. you know, silent joy.
Exactly. Like, and I love to cook, but I live alone. I'm not, and I spend most of my meals with other people outside of my home.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really suit, or it doesn't serve me to cook like that, right? Like to go and get all these recipes, because at a moment's notice, I might have to be on a flight tomorrow. Yeah. Now I'm gone for 5 days, their food is wasted. So like, I don't really cook like I used to, but this still allows me to like be creative and use my hands, as you pointed out, and do something that like feels great. And then at the end, I have like these little things that I can give to the homies or
yeah.
take with me on, you know, when I'm traveling or whatever. So
one of the last things that I want to ask you, mm-hmm. I'm going to share with you a couple of traits that I love about you as a person.
Mm.
So some of the things that you possess that I absolutely find to be like definitive characteristics of who you are.
Okay.
That I really enjoy.
Okay.
I think you're a very commanding person.
I like that you said commanding and not bossy.
Oh no, two very different things. You have a very commanding presence and a very direct way about you that mm-hmm. is very rare and very beneficial to the people's lives who you're in. You're a very celebratory person, and that is really special as a friend, but also like for clients and, you know, people that you work with. But you like to take the time to celebrate people. I'm a very excited person for other people, mm-hmm. but I don't get excited about myself or my stuff. I could literally have the biggest mm-hmm. deal of my life, and I'm not trying to avoid it. It's just not how my mind works,
yeah.
right?
I'm
kind of just way too in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, like, you will never get a text from me or a phone call from me. Oh my God, guess what just happened to me? Like, oh my God, like, ugh.
Yeah.
And which is not to, like, I love getting those calls from people. I just don't and can't do that.
Yeah.
But there have been many times in my life that I've had like some new milestone happen or something come about, and I'll just kind of plainly say it to you, and you'll be like, no, 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 let's go back. This is amazing.
Yes.
And you'll like really you'll celebrate me and yes. it feels great. And you'll bring me into a space of that. And I love that. You're very thoughtful, extremely, extremely thoughtful person. Mm. I'll never forget the time that when I was doing radio in Houston, I had just got promoted to music director and I had like my own office and I had just decorated my office. Mm. And out of nowhere, we're living in different states. Out of nowhere, I get a delivery to the reception area of my office. And, you know, it's like beautiful flower and bamboo arrangement, you know, that you just sent me to say congratulations. And yeah. that really meant so much. And I hadn't even told anyone that I got yeah. this promotion, but yeah. I just like really simply put it on my story or something like that. But you took it from that to go out of your way to do that. So I love that about you. You're very, very resourceful. You're a highly, highly resourceful person. There is no telling you no, and there is no, this isn't going to happen. You know, it really, you're like, okay, well, if that can't happen, then let me go back around and find something yeah. equal or better.
Yeah.
And you really do an incredible job of just being highly resourceful. And another thing, and you know, these aren't all the things, but these are what came up for me.
So the highlights, my highlight reel.
Yeah. Okay. But another thing is worth. I think you are somebody that genuinely knows your full worth. And I don't just mean that in a monetary sense, because I think especially in careers, especially like visible careers, that's what people interpret as worth. Like how many things are you posting about articles written about you, or how much money are you making? Or it's not just about, and that's important. It's not just about knowing your worth and like just fighting for your salary or your money. Like, you know your worth as a soul, as a person. You know what you share when you exist in a room with other people.
Yes. That one took me a long time. I think, well, I'll say that I felt like I learned that part about myself as it pertains to relationships with women and with work. But for men, it took me a long time for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one took me a long time. I don't think I really understood my worth as it pertains to relationships, like intimate relationships or love interests or love relationships with men, probably until a couple of years ago.
I think that's everybody. Yeah. You know, I mean, you're only in your early 30s.
No, for sure. For sure.
And you know, it's like that even in relationship with men, that's a muscle.
Yeah.
So it means that like you have to have a lot of experience in that space.
Yeah.
You're busy. You're not just, you know, running the streets. Yeah. Having, so it definitely takes time to get there.
I'm really touched by my highlight reel here.
Yeah, girl.
I really appreciate that. That's no, because I think that, you know, sometimes you're just living.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of moving like how you move, and you don't really take stock of the things that are happening in your life. You don't necessarily, like, you know that things are milestones, but you don't know their significance sometimes until way, way, way later, or until someone says like, no, that's important. And I think that's why I do that. I try to do that for other people. Like, I really love to celebrate people, mainly because like, I don't know how long I'll have people. So if I have you and I can tell you, or I can send you an arrangement, or I can write you a card, or I can bring you some lotion, like if I can give you something or do something or say something that makes you feel good, why would I not do that? You know?
Yeah.
You know, and I think the thoughtfulness part too, I'm probably gonna get all emotional about it, but I think the thoughtfulness part too comes from not having siblings, honestly, and wanting to connect with people all the time. And like, you know, I really don't have a lot of family. Like on my dad's side, I'm an only child. My dad was an only child. My grandmother was an only child. So I'm the last Anderson left. And then on my mom's side, that relationship is very strained, you know, and that's a bigger family, but I'm not really in that family, you know? So my friendships mean everything to me. Like, my friends are my family. Like, you are my family. Like, Quest is my nephew. Like, and I really feel that and believe that. And when you have put people in your life in positions where they have that much weight, I think it's important that they know, like, you matter to me.
Yeah.
You're important to me. And little things, man, the littlest things can have such an impact. Like, you know, I work in a job, or I work in a career that's very thankless. Very, very seldom do people say thank you, because they pay me. So they think that I'm not also deserving of the thank you.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Right. So for me,
I love when people say thank you. So I try to spend my life with my friends or other people that work for me or help me saying thank you. And thank you can come and look, you know, it looks in a lot of different ways, but you know, it doesn't hurt me to send you an arrangement to celebrate an amazing accomplishment for you. One, because I need you to know that you mean a lot to me. And it means I'm willing to spend the $100 or however much it costs so that you know that. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's absolutely,
it's so important. And I know that that comes from my grandmother who wrote cards, physical cards to people every week. You know, there was no texting. You had to send people like postage letters. You know, every week she would send things. I remember, sorry, this is a total tangent. But I remember going to, there was no CVS at the time, whatever was before CVS, Thrifty or something like that.
Thrifty, yep.
And my grandmother, every week we would go to the drugstore and she would buy like hella thinking of you cards.
Oh.
I mean like 20 cards.
Wow.
And throughout the week she would write different people, hey, just these thinking of you cards, and she would send them out to people. And I think seeing that all the time kind of, it stuck with me. You know, obviously, that's I'm not sending thinking of you cards, but it could be a text or it could be a flower arrangement or it could be like a, you know, hella heart emojis on an Instagram post or whatever it is. Yeah. But it's like, that's the things, those are the things that people remember too. Like,
yeah. And staying engaged with people in a way that, you know, matters to them.
Yes. Yes.
Like, you know, so that particular way that you do that matters to that person, or that's the best way to convey the message. Yeah.
You have to be really connected to people and like pay attention.
Pay attention. Yeah.
And my job is about paying attention, right? Yeah. Like, I have to pay attention all day with a client. So like, I think about like Marseille, right? Like, she's 14, she's young. I know when we got to wrap. Her whole energy changes. She gets tired. She's a kid. Mm-hmm. I have to constantly be paying attention to people's cues, right? So like for Issa, I know like when she gets certain things or when certain people send her stuff or if she gets a certain type of note, certain things resonate with her. So if I want to show her that I love her and I care about her and she matters to me, then I do it in a way that I know will affect her and touch her.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm really touched by your list though.
Oh, yeah, girl.
And the resourcefulness, girl, that's because, you know, ain't nobody out here really wanting Black women to win like that. I have to win, so I got to figure it out.
Yeah.
I hate to say it like that,
no,
but...
No, plainly said, yeah.
I mean...
I hear you.
It's not like we're at the top of people's list of like, you know, people aren't supporting Black women like that. People aren't bolstering Black women up.
I will say I'm glad to be alive in this exact time and moment in history because it's evolving and it's the best it's ever been.
And I, to that point, it's great because even a couple years ago, it wasn't like this. So we have clear memories of what it used to be. Listen. And what it is and what it, and hopefully we'll be around to see what it ends up really being.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think to your point, we're in this great space where how it used to be is not out of my mind.
Yeah.
I have
it's
vivid
not out
memories.
Of my immediate memories.
Yes. Yeah. I have vivid memories of sometimes my own people blocking me. And now we, you know, and now we're in this place or this space, excuse me, where we're really trying to figure it out and people are embracing women of color and Black women. And it's really beautiful.
It is.
It's really, really beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, girl.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode.
I hope it was good.
I love you very, very much. And I celebrate you and I honor you. And I am so excited for all that is yet to come.
Thank you, girl. I'm so happy you're doing this. This is so important, so needed. You know, I think that you have a really special light and a voice that needs to be shared. And I love that we live in a space and a time where we can do this anywhere. Yeah. Your light can be shared with everyone around the world.
Mm.
Like, the technology exists.
Yeah.
For that to happen now, which I think is so beautiful and great. And I'm so grateful for it. I was really surprised that you wanted little old me.
Oh, girl, bye. All right. And on that note,
I'm serious, girl.
Everybody listening, as Vanessa so beautifully pointed out, this is a time that you can get your voice, your story, whatever it is that you uniquely and wonderfully have to say out. So just do it. Yeah. Go. It's the Dropping Gems podcast. Big thank you for listening to this episode of the Dropping Gems podcast. This show is executive produced by Adrian Scott and me, Debbie Brown. Our theme music was created by producer Day One, and the poem that you heard at the beginning of the show, well, that was created especially for us by award-winning poet Nnamdi Okafor.
If you have a quick moment right now, please hit subscribe on the show. And if you like what you heard, take it a step further and give us a 5-star rating. Until next time, you connect with me on IG at Debbie Brown or my website, debbiebrown.com. Be blessed.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.